was on the Isle of Capri that I found her, beneath the shade of an old walnut tree. Oh, I can still see the flowers blooming around her, where we met on the Isle of Capri. She was as sweet as a rose at the dawning, but somehow fate hadn't meant her for me. And though I sailed with the tide in the morning, still my heart's on the Isle of Capri. Summertime was nearly over, blue Italian sky above. I said, lady, I'm a rover, can you spare a sweet word of love? She whispered softly, it's best not to linger. And then as I kissed her hand, I could see she wore a lovely meatball on her finger. 'Twas goodbye at the Villa Capri. Summertime was nearly over, blue Italian sky above. I said, lady, I'm a rover, can you spare a fine word of love? She whispered softly, it's best not to linger. And then as I kissed her hand, I could see she wore a plain golden ring on her finger. 'Twas goodbye on the Isle of Capri. 'Twas goodbye on the Isle of Capri. 'Twas goodbye on the Isle of Capri.
Welcome to Flavor Living Radio. This is Bryant, your host. Whew, that was Mr. Frank Sinatra, Isles of Capri. We have a theme show. It's our 100th show today. Welcome, everybody. It's going into the second week of November here, and we hope you enjoyed your weekend and enjoying the November. A lot of things happening in November. We have a special guest on with an S, guest on, and we have these stores that land here on the Flavor, and we have to interview and to share everybody what's happening with history and trends. But what just happened last weekend in Florida, some food news, they had the World Food Championships. It was going on in Kissimmee, Florida. You know, and I pronounce that right, everybody. If you go to Orlando, people kind of mix up, but that's in Kissimmee, Florida. They had the championships, and it should be right now. If you go to their website, you'll probably find out who won, because they had contests in the best chili of the world, best burger of the world, sandwich, bacon, pasta, seafood. So their website is worldfoodchampionships.com. So that was going on in Florida. And, you know, we celebrating our 100th show, and I'm just so happy. I can hear the cheers out there, all those listeners. But I got to get a theme song for a theme, you know. So every time I say 100 throughout the show, you'll hear this in the background. So let me see if I got something here. Like that, though. That's good. Tell everybody, hey, we're happy that we made it to 100. I want to thank all of our guests that's been on our show in the past. I want to thank Jules from Scarf and Carf. She has a new show coming out. It's been out now. This is our second show that's come out on the Food Share Network. And she's going to be in our network as where we're going to air our shows. And she's doing a good job. And just thank everybody and the listeners. Continue to listen each week and share ideas. So that's what you'll hear in the background, our theme music. Let me try it again. 100th show. Uh-huh. Okay, now we have to go to our show. So what happened? I got an email from Reverend George Mather. He said, hey, you know, I've got a cool cookbook I want you to look at. I said, yeah. I go, yeah, he's got a good cookbook. And it's called Hollywood's Celebrity Chef Cookbook, Recipes from the Past. So I'm saying, which one does he have? The cookbook is about a celebrity. So I sent an email back. I said, look, can we have an interview? It'd be great to be on the Flavor Living Radio. He said, yes. So we did the interview. And I can't tell you much about the interview, but I'm going to go ahead and start it off. Here's Reverend George Mather.
I'm just going to go ahead and welcome him to Flavor Living Radio before. This is a huge, huge cooking story. Welcome to Flavor Living, Mr. Reverend George Mather. How's it going?
Oh, doing really well, thank you.
Wow, welcome. How's the weather message? I know it's fall, everything there.
Well, you know, it's sort of cold. Hopefully won't be as bad as last year, but having lived out on the West Coast for the last 30 years, my wife and I, serving in California and Utah, we came back here 2 years ago when I retired.
Okay.
And it's the worst weather, cold weather, in just about New England history. So it's pretty bad last year.
Wow. You know, I wanted to say, to start the story by going to the West Coast at the Sherman Oaks Lutheran Church in Los Angeles. You were there. You were a pastor there at the time.
I was. I was a pastor there just for a short while when we had this interesting elderly gentleman come in who would turn out to be Chef Paul Posty. And it was very interesting because he sort of wandered in trying to find peace for himself,
yes,
having gone through a very difficult life. And like a lot of people do, he started going to church trying to find answers to life.
So, like the story goes, one Sunday, somebody came in.
One Sunday, Paul Posty came in, and he sort of told me after the service that he liked my accent, and then revealed that he lived in Boston. He wouldn't have had to say too much. I would have recognized that, the accent. And they're talking about being a chef, and I told him, well, I had worked in the restaurant business myself. I was a chef at the Colonnade Hotel in Boston at the Promenade Cafe. I had worked at Hugo's Lighthouse and had been a chef at Sheraton Tara, Massachusetts, and Disneyland Hotel. And we immediately hit it off.
Wow. So Chef Paul Posty comes in to the church, and you guys talked. And now, was he really humble, very humble person when he came in?
He was. He had a very interesting experience. When he was talking with my wife, he, in the conversation, got into the discussion of the war, because my wife's father had been in the Air Force up in Alaska, and she mentioned that. And he said, yeah, I got my injury during the war. And he took off his glasses and he started tapping them against his glass eye. And we thought that was very unusual. And that was how we met Paul Posty, showing us his war injury, how he lost his eye in a battle.
Wow.
And that was our introduction to Paul Posty. Wonderful guy. But he was a troubled soul because of the hardships he's gone through, not only from the war, but being raised in a family where his father was abusive, having been a member of the Black Hand, an enforcer. And Paul Posty, it turns out that he was so embarrassed about this, that's why he changed his name from Posteezy to Posty.
Wow. Now, he goes on and explains, as you were saying, he says, hey, I like to, I am also a chef too. And you, did at that, right there at the moment there, did he explain who he was or what he was a chef for?
That came out a little later. He said, what do you say your wife and I your wife and yourself come over for dinner Monday, which was the next day, and we did. And he cooked for us ossobuco, remoulada. And what he said was, while opening up the refrigerator and taking out the package of meat, he unwraps it, he smells it. He says, oh, just like Frank loved it. And
did you guys hear that, everybody? So, Frank, there's one famous Frank in the world, and I will let Reverend Mathers explain the story.
So he ends up telling me, I asked him, well, where have you worked? And he said, well, I was Mr. Sinatra's chef. He called him Frank that time, but to be honest with you, he usually called him Mr. Sinatra. He was very respectful. It turns out that Mr. Sinatra, during the 50s, when Paul, the mid-60s, Paul had a major heart attack, and Mr. Sinatra took him out of the Veterans Hospital, brought him to see the Sinai in Hollywood, in Beverly Hills, and took care of him, made sure that he got the best care, and he had one of those heart transplants during the early years when they were just doing them, and it cost a small fortune, and Mr. Sinatra paid for that. So he was always grateful. He had met Frank Sinatra back in the mid-30s in Hoboken, okay. New Jersey.
So they were in New Jersey at the time, okay. All right.
And he would come into the restaurant where Paul was a chef, and he was, it's what Paul called the lean years. Frank was not successful at first, and he used to feed him, and not charge him because he liked them because they were both Sicilians, he said. And he got along with Frank,
and
so he would come in, and Frank would be fed by Paul Posty, and some of those recipes that Frank Sinatra liked so much throughout his life, knowing Paul Posty, they're in the book also. For example, the meatballs the recipe in there, they're actually mentioned in Frank Sinatra's record, Isle of Capri. It was tonight at the Villa Capri, had a meatball on a finger, and that came from Paul's meatballs. He did that to honor Paul.
Kissed her hand, I could see. She wore a lovely meatball on her finger. 'Twas goodbye at the Villa Capri.
Wow. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Reverend George Mathers, he has a book. It's over 330 pages, and it's a cookbook. And the name of the cookbook, I just got it in the mail yesterday. It's called Hollywood Celebrity Chef Cookbook Recipes from the Past. And those recipes are from Chef Paul Posty, who was the chef for, I'm going to say it too, I'm going to honor Mr. Sinatra.
And you know what, Brian? The recipes in there were used in the finest restaurants throughout the world throughout his career. And they're wonderful, and some of them very rare. For example, there's no other place in the world you can get the original steak Sinatra that was used at the Villa Capri. That recipe is in there. Also, Elvis Presley's hamburger sauce. Paul Posty used to cook hamburgers for Elvis Presley when he would visit the Knickerbocker Hotel.
Okay.
And so Frank would cook them those hamburgers, but he had a special sauce, and that recipe is in there. And no one else had it.
So when he was cooking at he was cooking at the different places at the Brown Derby, because I saw the Brown Derby and Villa Copra. He was cooking at the famous Hollywood where all the stars came in and making them all.
Well, he got a job.
Yes.
He got the job at the Brown Derby from Clark Gable. They were stationed together in England during the war.
Mm-hmm.
And he had previously worked at the Brown Derby, but Clark Gable was good friends with Robert Cobb, the owner of the Brown Derby, and they were looking for a chef. And he went over to Universal Cafe, where Frank was a chef, and talked them into coming back to the Derby. He said they really needed him. And it's there that he, along with Bob Cobb, invented the Cobb salad. that created the Cobb salad. Most of it was Postie. And that's a wonderful story, by the way.
That is in the book as well. The Cobb.
It is. And Paul always felt bad about that because though he did most of the work in creating it, he never got the credit for it. Typically, the owner of the business got the credit, and you know, Cobb salad. And you look it up on the internet, and it says that he one night at midnight went to his refrigerator and pulled out the ingredients, Bob Cobb, and he made the salad. That's not how it happened.
Mm-hmm. So it should be the Cobb Postie salad, to be honest with you, right?
Well, it could be. It would be accurate,
you know,
if you said that.
But what happened? What happened on that night? You said as far as the Cobb salad.
Well, the story is this: Cecil B. DeMille, the great director of Cleopatra and the Ten Commandments, came in with Walt Disney for lunch at the Brown Derby, and Mr. DeMille went over to Bob Cobb and said, "Would you have Paul make me some kind of special salad, something different?" And he said, "Sure." Of course, Robert Cobb was not really being truthful with Mr. DeMille because Paul was busy upstairs interviewing cooks. They needed cooks. So he went ahead and made the salad, Bob Cobb, and gave it to Cecil B. DeMille. He liked it. He left, but 2 weeks later, what happened was Cecil B. DeMille came back to the Brown Derby and saw Paul and said, I like that salad. Make me another one. He says, "Sure, Mr. DeMille." But he didn't know how to make it. He didn't make it before. So he ran up to the office, talked to Bob Cobb, and Bob Cobb had forgotten the ingredients except for the chicory and the eggs, just about that. I think there was another ingredient. He only remembered like three ingredients.
Okay.
And Paul went down and he said, "Well, I can make a good salad." And he put the salad together the way he thought it should go and put together the vinaigrette dressing and gave it to Bob Cobb, and when Bob Cobb was leaving the restaurant after he ate it, he goes over to Paul. He says, "That was even better than the last one." And that became the Cobb salad that everyone knows about today. Of course, a lot of restaurants don't serve it correctly, but that's the original recipe. I own the original 1945 recipe in his handwriting.
Well, I'm just going to call it the pasta salad. The pasta salad, you know, the pasta salad.
English.
Yeah,
well,
I'm going to do it.
In the culinary world, it'll be a little bit of an argument there. But
yeah, I know. I don't want to be disrespectful to call it, you know, but I'm just going to call it the pasta salad. You know,
well, you'll be honest about it. But you see, I've got the 1945 recipe in his handwriting, and it says right in there, created by Paul Postie. And then I also have the original 1946 recipe in his writing, and you can see what's scratched off, and it says, by Bob Cobb. And so what happened was Bob Cobb got the credit, but it was he who created it mostly.
Wow. Now, I saw that for 6 years, you were like his apprentice, correct? You studied?
What happened was... when we went over that first night and had such a good time with him and his wife Irene, that he said, "I want to teach you the things that I've learned and have used with all of the celebrities, the gourmet cooking." And so most Mondays, my wife and I would go over there and we would cook and then have dinner together. A lot of those Mondays, Monday evenings rather, and. I'd say most of them, we would be cooking that day, and he'd be teaching me, sort of as he was my mentor. And that's where I learned a lot of the stuff that he had learned over the years, the good things.
Wow, what a mentor. What a mentor.
He was.
You know.
But he's hard to be with, though. He was very, he was older then, and anyone that knows a lot of the chefs, that met a lot of chefs, they know they can be kind of temperamental. He's from the old school. You wouldn't tell him that Manhattan clam chowder was chowder. He'd never believe it. And he's from the old school. He's from the Boston area, so he knew New England clam chowder. And
he stuck with it. That's what he stuck with. I gotcha.
Well, he didn't like anything but white outfits, the uniforms. He thought it was too showy, the way that a lot of the chefs would dress. And he was from the old school. pretty traditional.
They heard the breeze through the trees singing weird, weird melodies, and they named that the start of the blues. And from a jail came a whale, from a down hearted frail, and they call that the start of the moon. From a whippoorwill high on a hill.
How about that?
They took a new note, pushing in a horn till it was born. I'll call you if I need you, till it's a blue note. Then they nursed it, and they rehearsed it.
How does it feel to sit in the back of the bus?
Then I came up the news that the Southland really gave birth.
Give Dean a chance.
It's up.
That was the Rat Pack. Yes, everybody knows the Rat Pack. Very famous. We got to get back to the show and talk to Reverend George Mathers as our part two about this famous chef from Massachusetts that cooked. He was the personal chef for Mr. Frank Sinatra.
Now, as I look through the book, I look through it and it's just... Well, it starts off, everybody, just from the basics as far as how to address the menu. You know, what the thinking behind the menu. And it starts off in the beginning, and then it just gets like, it's like a PhD in cooking book to me. That's what I look at, how I look at it. You know, it's just, wow, it's incredible.
Well, the recipes, if you look at them, they could be used in any restaurant by any chef because...
And they are today, you said. They're used in all over the world, right? A lot of the recipes there?
Well, the recipes came from the finest hotels and restaurants all over the world. That's all he ever worked at. And so the recipes, what's good about it for a person who owns a restaurant or a cook or chef, you'd be using recipes that are time-proven. It's not like he's making Rice Krispie squares. You know, these are the finest gourmet recipes, and they're put together by a wonderful chef, and they've already been proven. They were used at the best places. It wouldn't matter if it was a Knickerbocker Hotel or Villa Capri or any of the restaurants where Postie had worked. It could have been Trafalgar Square at Gennaro's or Papagallo in Bologna.
You can make your own salad dressings and just desserts. And there's 22 coffees, 22 different. That's more than Starbucks, I think. That's 22 different coffee styles that you can make at home.
I just got some wonderful news, and that was I had done another interview. Radio interview, and the chef at the Gillette Stadium of the New England Patriots, Mr. Kraft's personal chef, got hold of the cookbook, and they're going to use the salad dressing, the New York Ranch, they call it.
Yeah.
That's going to be their house dressing.
Yeah.
And at the stadium, home of the New England Patriots.
That's a good honor, very good honor, you know.
It is. And the recipes there are unique, they're different, they're professional, and you will just love them.
Yes, the soups, so many. You have, on the soups, you have thin soups, thick soups. You have chowder soups, cream soups, you have everything.
Yes.
Stews, this, that.
That's
that.
Right, and also methodology. You know, how do you cook those things? It's not just a recipe. You need to know the difference between broiling and braising and boiling or frying. Those, I make a New England pot roast jardinière for dinner today, for example. You don't boil it, you braise the meat. You've got to let that moisture go up the top of the pan and drip down and break down the meat fiber. That's the proper way to do it. So the methodology as well as the recipes are in the book. But they're old school. You don't open cans for this stuff. These are the kind of recipes that a lot of people probably wouldn't even eat them today because they didn't come out of a can. But if someone likes cooking, if they like cooking and it's a hobby and they like good food, then love it.
Yeah, or start your own restaurant. He's explaining that he was the chef for Mr. Sinatra. How did that come about?
Well, in 1935, he left the Statler Hilton in Boston. The clam chowder recipe comes from Statler Hilton, And the not only the clam chowder, but the Boston baked bean recipe comes from there. But he left the Statler Hilton and went to Hoboken. I can't even tell you the name of the restaurant. I never asked him. But he worked there for a couple of years, and that's where he met Frank Sinatra. And he liked Posty's cooking, and because they were both Sicilian boys, they really got along. A lifelong friendship developed, and when Frank Sinatra became the star, Jimmy Dorsey's band, he hired Paul Posty to work for him. So Posty not only worked at his home, but he would work at the Villa Capri, which was sort of a West Coast hangout for the mob. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that. But I know it was very famous for many many years. Many years.
It was, that's right. And
in Los Angeles, I went online to research, and many people, even today, they're like, yeah, that was the place, that was the hangout, that was that everybody went there,
Well, you know, it's funny. Frank Sinatra had a booth in the Villa Capri. It became his office because Capitol Records was just down the street.
Okay.
And he would do a lot of his work there, and that's where the Rat Pack would meet. And it's there that Paul Posty was given the recipe for the Hollywood Hangover by Dean Martin. He gave him a recipe on how to treat the Hollywood Hangover. That's in the book, too. There's a lot of interesting things there.
Okay. That's good. Wow. Yeah. Now, you had mentioned that Chef Posty, he was in a military. He was in the Air Force?
He was in the Army Air Force. Well, that's what it was called back then. In England, and with Clark Gable, who was a friend of his. Clark Gable was commissioned to make a documentary film, which turned out to be Combat America, which Posty was also in. But a couple of things happened there, and I'll mention this one thing. Posty became the only person in American history who actually shot down a German plane with his father's 38 service revolver. And it was documented on film by Clark Gable. He actually shot the plane down with it.
You know, I went back and I found a news article. And I'm putting, for everybody who's looking at the show or our website, I have a news article from what happened then. It's a true story. I saw the news article, everything. Has a picture of Clark Gable there. It's true. Very true.
This is a man who literally cooked for kings and queens and Hollywood's golden age of stars. And these are the exact recipes they loved, and they loved the chef even more.
Wow. Where can everybody find the order, the Hollywood Celebrity Chef Cookbook? Where can they order?
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you in that information. So you mentioned you might want to post it. But
yes,
for the audience listening now, go to Amazon.com, Amazon, and just look up the title of the book, Hollywood Celebrity Chef Recipes from the Past, and they'll see it there. And it just came out. It's a new book, and it'll make a wonderful Christmas gift for that person that loves to cook. And I can assure you, it's not like any cookbook you've ever had, because not only the unique over 800 recipes, you've got those insider stories that are quite humorous, actually. Many of them are really funny. The chowder base is clam chowder. As another one, I'll guarantee you, is the best clam chowder you've ever had. It's the real thing. And originally it was at the Parker House restaurant. And for Thanksgiving, Bryant,
yes,
I would recommend the Indian pudding. It's an original recipe
that came
from Hugo's Lighthouse in Cohasset, Massachusetts. And this wonderful Thanksgiving dessert, Indian pudding, came from a chef, Frank Tricaraki, who was a friend of mine. And when I made it for one Thanksgiving with Paul, he said, I can improve that. So he did. He added some ingredients, and it did improve it. It was wonderful. And if you want to make something different for Thanksgiving that was originally in New England, you might even argue the Pilgrims had the first Indian pudding baked in a pumpkin. That's what the legend is. You're going to love this recipe.
Reverend George Mather, thank you for being on Flavor Living Radio and explaining this book. I'm going to look for you. You're going to have more books in a few. I think,
Brian, I thank you very much. It's been good talking with you and your audience.
Yeah.
And I wish everyone a wonderful Thanksgiving and upcoming Christmas and Hanukkah. And
yes,
I hope you'll have a great week.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You too, man. Thank you, Reverend. Man, thank you. All right.
And there you have it. I know. I was like, that's why we had to have the interview here on The Flavor. I mean, Reverend George Mathers, he just told us some history, some real history. You know, you guys can Google and see this is a real story. So thank you for tuning in to Flavor Living Radio for today. And wait a minute. I was thinking I can't just leave like that. I got to have one more, you know, kapow. So before we go, we have a recipe, a lasagna recipe from Antoinette and Paul Walters. They are here from Hampton Roads, and here is, every so often I'd like to do this more, have others live give us a cool recipe that they can give away on air. So we have Antoinette and Paul Walters give their lasagna. Antoinette's, she is from Italy. Because, listen, you have to get a pen and paper out because she has an Italian accent. So you're going to hear really good. So you can hear the show again, or you can take fast notes or listen very good. But here is the lasagna that is so good. Here it is.
Just fine.
We are doing the fine. We are happy to share the recipe with the nationwide.
Yes, yes, yes. Did you hear that? That's a good Italian. That's an accent from Italy?
From Gaeta, Italy.
Yes, 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 yes. And they came by and, listen, she has a great recipe that would fit in with our show. And and please, everybody have their pens out. I've got my pen out because I wrote the recipe when I was there. But I said, hey, I wanted to ask you to be on our show to share the recipe. Antoinette, share the recipe. What goes into it now?
All right. So I do make the sauce the day before. So it makes it easier than the pasta to make it. So what I do, I get the 7 tanks of tomato sauce. I prefer contadina, 15 ounces.
So you said you have 7 types of tomato sauce?
Yes, so for to make the sauce, because this it serves 16 servants. It's the baking pan feeds 16 servants. 16. Yes. So I make the sauce before the day before, and the next day I got it ready. And what I do, I get this big sauce. Do you want to know the measurement?
Yes. Yes.
Twelve by sixteen.
Inches long. 3 inches deep.
And 3 inches deep. So they gotta get the deep pan to make this lasagna.
Okay.
All right. So what I do, I make the sauce the day before with the ground beef. I buy the lean ground beef.
The lean ground beef. Okay. Okay.
I buy the 93% settles. So what I do, I brown onions, ground beef into the olive oil with a little bit of fresh garlic, just a little bit. So then when it's brown, I do put in a couple of spoons of wine. Any kind of wine would be good. Yes. And you stir till it's all golden. And then I put in the tomato sauce. And I let it cook for about 3/4 an hour, like this.
Okay. Okay.
And, so when the sauce is ready, I buy the noodles are Barilla Oven Ready Lasagne. It's already ready to make the lasagna. You don't need to cook it. It's called the Barilla Oven Ready Lasagna. I spray with cooking spray oil, you know, a candle oil. I spray the can and I put in quite a bit of the lasagna. Quite a bit of the sauce, the tomato sauce. I put the noodles, they are squares, so it's 12 layers, I put this is the first layer.
Okay.
And then you get you get a bowl with 6 eggs. You beat the 6 eggs.
Okay, 6 eggs, everybody. 6 eggs.
6 eggs and ricotta. I mix eggs and ricotta cheese. Now you put all together. Egg. Okay, you beat the eggs first. And then you put in the ricotta with a little bit of salt and pepper. And you mix it all together. And you spread on the noodles. Okay. Then you put the pepperoni. You know, my husband likes I put just a little bit of the pepperoni. Harmel.
Yes.
Not so, in a little pieces, but just a little bit, just a little.
So this is the bottom layer, right?
Then you put the mozzarella. Mozzarella, it needs 4 cups of mozzarella. It's all for all together. You spread the mozzarella on the top of the ricotta cheese and the eggs. And sprinkle with Parmigiano cheese, and you put the some sauce. You have to put the sauce on all of this ice spread.
Okay.
After that, you get another layer. You lay down another layer, but to put it in a different way.
Crisscross.
Crisscross gotta be the second layer.
Okay.
Okay?
No. Say that again. Say that again on the second layer. What's on the second layer? Please.
Okay, on the second layer. The second layer is just about the same thing. You spray.
Okay, understand. Understand now. Okay.
Okay. You spray the night with the same thing. And then you make another layer, always grease cross with another layer with the same thing. And you gotta cover it with a quite bit of tomato sauce. Tomato sauce on the top, the rest of the mozzarella cheese. Okay, the trick is to buy the good brand. I buy the Dabani for the ricotta cheese and the Ben Gioioso for the mozzarella. And you cover it with that. And the oven gotta be 375. The oven ready at 375.
Okay.
And you bake it for 1 hour, covered up with aluminum foil.
Okay.
Okay. And after 1 hour, you uncover it and let it cook for another 25 minutes. It gotta be all gold on the top.
Okay. So after 1 hour, 25 minutes to relax. The lasagna.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. They gotta cook it first at 375 for 1 hour.
Okay.
With the aluminum foil covered up, and to uncover it and to cook it for another 25 minutes on the cover.
Yes.
All right. And when it's ready, to take it out and to let it stand for a while, at least about 15 to 20 minutes, because if you serve it the right way, it comes apart.
Right off the fork. Off the fork.
Yeah. All right. So I have a little secret now. When I make the sauce, I put a little bit of sugar. Just a little bit of sugar. And you need the basil and the oregano in the sauce.
Okay.
So now you know all of my secrets now.
No. This one, I had to get the lasagna. You know what I'm going to do also, because what I was going to do on our website, flavorlivingradio.com, I'm going to see if I can ask Antoinette, can we also have the, I was going to write down everything for everybody to look at.
All the ingredients.
Yes, so they can hear, while they're hearing, they can hear everything, they can also see everything, because they have to know about this. Everybody's got to know about this.
All of the ingredients for to make the sauce?
Yes, to make this great, the Antoinette lasagna. Yes.
My grandpa gave it to my father's father.
Oh, he wanted
to go. So, all right. So you
will.
I hope they enjoy it.
Here
is my
son. Okay. Ciao.
All
right. Bye, Antoinette and Paul. Bye now.
Bye. Yes. There it is. That's right. Man, that was our show today on the Flavor Living Radio. We hope you come back for more to listen here. And go to our website. Our website is, for more updates, is flavorlivingradio.com. Drive safe and eat well and have a great week on the Flavor.
Restaurants and recipes with adventures too.